Okay, the council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Adams?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Leonard? Saltzman?
Here.
Potter?
Okay, Carla, could you please read the first communication?
Item 1115, request of Mary Luce to address council regarding Peterson's store.
Morning.
My name's Mary Luce.
If you could just take a seat
and
give us your name, and then you have 3 minutes. There's a clock right in front of you there.
My name is Mary Luce. I want to thank the council for keeping the store open because the people who go there like it there. It's very convenient. For example, I get off Max and stop in at the store before I go a couple of blocks south to the library. I think the store helps the neighborhood because it's convenient for all the people that use it. Mr. Peterson also has a reputation for employing people with disabilities, and I like that. I don't find work easily, so it's nice to know that someone is doing it. I think the conflicts that have been discussed have decreased a lot, and I think that this whole thing never should have happened. I'm not following my writing because it's not working out to do that. I hope that it becomes passable for a long-term lease to be re-granted, because that would support the store improvements. And I regret the Oregonian article in which somebody said that the dregs of society go there and the store is disgusting. It's not disgusting, and speaking for myself, I don't consider myself a dreg of society. And a lot of what's been said is not really true about the store. The store is a community of people, and we all appreciate what's there. Everybody stops in and gets things they need and doesn't stay very long, and it's very busy. There are about 1,000 customers a day, at least. It's helpful to have it open for 24 hours. Thank the council for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you for keeping the store open.
Thank you. Read the next communication.
Item 1116, request of Edmundo Ed Cardenas to address council regarding the urgent plight of the homeless.
Mr. Cardenas here? Doesn't appear to be. So would you read the next communication, Carla?
Item 1117, request of Richard L. Meyer to address council regarding the election of the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association.
Morning.
Good morning.
You could just state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes. There's a clock right in front of you.
My name is Richard L. Meyer. On June 10th, 2008, 8,000 citizens of the Portsmouth neighborhood were discriminated against and disenfranchised from their right to participate in their neighborhood association general election. The numerous, egregious, and easily verified violations of Oregon Revised Statutes, ONI standards, PNA bylaws, and administrative rules cited below make it clearly self-evident that the election was was illegitimate. Here are the salient points of the PNA corporate election. The PNA membership was not sent written notices telling them date, time, and place of the election. The overwhelming majority of the 8,000 citizens that live in the Portsmouth neighborhood were not notified of the election. No membership records were available at the election. The chair refused to identify anyone in the room who was qualified to vote The chair announced that the election was being conducted on the honor system. The chair, Jeannie Knepper, did not live, own property, or a business in the Portsmouth neighborhood, and was unqualified to be a PNA voting member, much less chair, and had no dated written authority to represent any organization. Nonetheless, ONI staffer Tom Griffin Vallade, contrary to PNA rules, said nothing about the procedural violations and participated in the election by counting the votes, which is the clear and stated responsibility of the Ballot and Elections Committee. The presence and participation of ONI staff member Tom Griffin Vallade makes ONI culpable, responsible, and accountable as a co-conspirator in the illegitimate conduct of the PNA election. The mayor of Portland and the city council have spent 3.5 years and over $1 million of public funds to develop a vision of Portland, which includes the maximum participation of all groups in the process of city government. There is no more fundamental exercise of citizen involvement than the right to improve the quality of life by fully participating in the deliberations of a neighborhood association. The discriminatory and exclusionary actions of the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association, aided and abetted by the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, are a direct repudiation of everything the mayor and the council have been trying to achieve. On behalf of the 8,000 disenfranchised citizens of the Portsmouth neighborhood, I ask each of you to tell your staffs and your bureaus that the Portsmouth Neighborhood Association election was illegitimate and they should not do business with that corporation's officers until a fair and legal election is held. And increase ONI's budget to include $1 for every person in each neighborhood to cover the cost of a real election. Without fair and inclusive elections, no neighborhood association nor ONI has any credibility. ONI's participation in an illegitimate election is a danger signal that after 34 years, ONI's mission has been compromised by a bureaucracy that has lost its way. ONI's legitimacy is now debatable. It's time to reevaluate ONI's role in city government. Suppressing a citizen's right to vote by any means is undemocratic and un-American. The Portsmouth Neighborhood Association and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement are guilty of the shameful, illegal, and illegitimate behavior. Their behavior cannot and must not stand.
Time is up.
Mr. Elmire, I have two questions.
Yes.
One is, do we have a copy of your written testimony?
You will.
Okay. And two, is there some administrative appeal that can be exercised short of coming to us and blasting the process? Is there some appeal to ONI or some other body? And if so, has someone exercised that right?
There is what's known as a grievance procedure that is built into PNA bylaws. However, the nature of this grievance has to do with the very election itself.
The only point I want to make is when someone raises an issue about an election and fairness and due process, those are important issues. But it feels like you sort of leapfrogged and come to the council for some recourse. If there's some intermediate step where ONI or someone else is responsible for investigating and reporting to us, I think you'll find this more helpful.
I have asked ONI, the director of ONI, to deal with this matter, and she has not responded. I've asked the mayor, who is the commissioner in charge of ONI, to respond, and he has not responded, so I have left no choice. If either of those had responded, I would not be before you today.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that brings us to the first time certain. Carly, would you read the first time certain?
Agenda item 1118, revise the business license law code to use the term tax instead of fee, clarify certain sections, and create a new chapter titled Temporary Businesses.
Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Mr. President, and staff and guests. This ordinance continues the important business license fee reforms that this council passed in early 2007, specifically committing to increasing the owner's compensation deduction to $125,000 and the gross receipts exemption to $50,000. Currently, the business license is paid in advance, the business license for the City of Portland. This ordinance changes that to move the license to a tax paid after the fact, the same as Multnomah County, State of Oregon, and the federal government. To do that, calculation changes are made on the business tax return in the first year and in the final year. This is an issue that was brought up in our initial round of tax reform, and this alignment increases the efficiency and reduces costs for the city's revenue bureau and has the potential to reduce the preparation costs and the confusion for the local businesses that pay our business license fee. This change benefits small businesses the most. No payment is required when someone starts a business. They only need to register. And the new business won't face a double amount due after their first year like they do now. For the next 5 years, over 20,000 businesses will receive the initial year adjustment credit. That credit will be anywhere from $100 up to $140,000. 19,000 of those businesses will receive between $100 and $1,000 credit. It's a good time in terms of a slow economy that we're able to give businesses a credit as part of this transition now. We've also done extensive outreach over the past 2 years to different business and tax professional organizations about the proposed changes and have received support from the great majority of those groups. A total of 12, including the 82nd Avenue Business Association, East Portland Chamber of Commerce, the Portland Business Alliance, the Small Business Advisory Committee, and others have been part of our outreach efforts. And the Portland Business Alliance, Small Business Advisory Council have both submitted letters in support of the change, and we'll be hearing from their representatives shortly. In terms of the realtors, which has been an area of controversy, currently, since a business license tax is paid in advance of doing business, real estate agents are exempt. These proposed changes will remove that exemption. These real estate agents have been taxed by Multnomah County in the past and will be taxed by the city in the future. And just to be clear, I brought this issue up to the real estate industry a couple of years ago. I've met personally with their board of directors. My staff and staff from City Council have met with them on repeated occasions to have a dialogue about this change. Approximately 1,000 realtors will now pay at least the minimum fee of $100, and the Bureau of Revenue estimates a revenue increase from the entire real estate industry from $150,000 to $200,000 based on the returns currently being filed by the real estate brokers for the Multnomah County Business Income Tax. This has been a long time in the making, and I want to thank Sue Clobertantz from the Bureau of Revenue, along with Terry Williams and Scott Carter. I'd like to thank Shane Abma from the City Attorney's Office, Kimberly Schneider from my office, and we're going to have a presentation from Sue and Terry.
Thank you. Sue Clobertantz, Director for the Revenue Bureau, and with me is Terry Williams, License and Tax Division Manager in the Revenue Bureau. But before Terry speaks to this specific ordinance, Commissioner Adams' office asked that we provide a quick update on the whole BLF reform, the business license reform efforts. As Sam alluded to, back in January of 07, following lengthy public testimony and input, the City Council adopted a resolution. That resolution was very specific, directing the Revenue Bureau to make changes in the city's business license law to encourage growth of small businesses, reduce tax burden inequities, better tie city services provided to taxes received, and preserve the financial health of the city. It's this resolution and the discussion surrounding it that set our work plan for the last 18 months. There are a number of pieces to the business license reform. Sam just mentioned the reform ordinance that came to council in March of 07. That, in addition to some housekeeping language changes, also raised the gross receipts exemption from $25,000 to $50,000, and it raised the owner's compensation allowance deduction maximum to $80,000 for the 2007 tax year. As part of that conversation received in March and April of 07, council also directed the Revenue Bureau and Commissioner Adams' office, as well as County Commissioners Jeff Kogan's office, to put together a work group that included representatives from the venture capital industry, tax professionals, and city and county representatives. This work group was tasked to review the tax treatment of venture capital or diversified investing funds. The final changes to the administrative rule adopted in November of 07 reflected consensus of that group and allowed for equal tax treatment of all the parties involved. Now, in August of 08, we're bringing forward the ordinance that Terry will speak about in a moment. But we won't be done after today. because that January 07 resolution anticipated the city would increase the owner's compensation deduction to $125,000 jointly with a tiered minimum fee structure ranging from $100 to $1,000 tied either to number of employees or Portland's gross receipts. About a year ago, we estimated that the annual business license revenue loss, or loss to the general fund, due to the increased owner's comp going to $125,000 was roughly about $1 million. A tiered minimum fee structure would add revenue to the general fund, offsetting this estimated reduction. However, we didn't have employee information, so it was impossible for us to do any kind of analysis as to what kind of structure would be best for the city. Over the last 2 years, since tax year 06, we've been asking businesses as part of their business license forms to include employee data. Unfortunately, most businesses have not included that information. So we found ourselves a few months ago trying to figure out how we were going to reach our fall deadline of bringing back to you a tiered structure of some sort. So we took two steps in the last few months to assist in collecting the employee data. In today's ordinance, number one, you'll see that that inclusion of the employee data is mandatory. So if the business license forms are filled annually, given to the Revenue Bureau annually without that employee data, it will be incomplete and will not be filed. Secondly, and more importantly, we've shifted some resources using some interns, using some temporary and seasonal staff to basically just get on the phone. That group of employees have completed calls to all of the non-filer accounts, just under 8,000 non-filer accounts, so people who have filed with us previously but not this past year. And we received a 38% response on those phone calls getting employee information. And the group of employees are now working on those that have filed business license in the last year. And that's about 11,000 accounts. And so far, we haven't completed that work, but we have about a 44% response rate. So we are getting the employee data one account at a time. We expect that this project will be completed in early September, which will then allow us to do the analysis in the fall and bring back options for the proposed tiered fee structure by early 2009. And then this would allow for changes to impact tax year 09 if the council desires. I believe the Revenue Bureau is on target to complete all the work outlined in that original January 07 expectation and as further directed by council. I know that I speak for both Terry and I when I say that we appreciate the assistance from the mayor's office, Commissioner Adams' office, as well as the input and assistance from the Multnomah County staff. We look forward to much more lively discussion in the coming months as we bring back the proposal for the tiered fee. But at this point, let me stop and turn it over to Terry, who can speak to the specific ordinance in front of you today.
Thank you. Terry Williams, Revenue Bureau. The three key points of this change to an after-the-fact tax revolve around when a business begins, when a business ends, and how we treat existing businesses to ensure equity. Reducing the burden for a new business is an important step to show that Portland is open for business. By requiring a business to register within 60 days of starting business, we establish the first opportunity to provide new businesses with valuable resources and assistance via the city's welcome kit and our business lookup site. No money is due with this business registration, so that's a big change in the business license. And if a business does not have to pay in advance, there is a more straightforward tie to when the profit is made, and there is no unexpected surprise, what we've referred to as a doubling up at the end of the first year. So that's better for business. Most businesses file income tax returns and understand the ability to pay principal. Moving Portland's business license to act like all the other income taxes at the federal, state, and county level reduces confusion and creates certainty. Moving to this tax structure will affect each individual business differently, some positively and some negatively. But making Portland's rules more like all the other income taxes creates understanding and consistency for business. And again, that's better. Since many existing businesses have already paid this doubled amount in the first year, it is critical that we find an equitable solution, since we will now expect them to file the final year in the future and pay any resulting taxes due. So existing businesses are going to receive a credit equal to the payment in advance that they made. This ordinance provides that that credit is to be paid out over 5 years, reducing the burden on the general fund. The Bureau estimates that the revenue generated by the taxes from the final year tax returns will offset the payout of the credits. The Revenue Bureau has been working to determine the exact amount of this credit for each business currently operating and will provide them with a letter and a reasonable a letter telling them what that credit is per our records and provide them with a reasonable time to protest our calculations if their records differ from ours. In addition to the changes that are directly related to the after-the-fact tax, and those are the key areas that that's in, there are lots of word changes to reflect the change from a fee to a tax. But additionally, there are some necessary housekeeping changes. A new code section is being established for temporary licenses. This is not a new fee or requirement since it's existed for decades. It simply doesn't fit within the tax chapter any longer as it's changed, so it needs to be moved to its own chapter, since that truly is a fee that we have for somebody that comes in under very specific circumstances for a very short amount of time. Language was added to the code to clearly state that we require information, not just records. And this allows us to require the employee data that Sue mentioned so we can continue the analysis that you've directed us to do. Code sections have been simplified, definitions moved to a single section for clarity, or have been updated to reflect business reality and, again, add clarity. And the penalty structure has been modified to allow the Bureau to assess a penalty if the forms we receive are not completed as required. Finally, I had the opportunity to talk with most of the 12 organizations that Commissioner Adams mentioned. Five of those business organizations included the SBAC and the Cost of Doing Business Committee, 82nd Avenue, East Portland Chamber of Commerce, BOMA, and PMAR, the Realtor Association. I also talked with seven tax professional organizations, including the Oregon Association of Independent Accountants, three chapters of the Oregon Association of Tax Consultants, the enrolled agents, they're the ones that practice before the IRS, the Oregon Society of CPAs, their taxation interest team, and the Oregon State Bar Legislative Subcommittee. As Commissioner Adams mentioned, most of the feedback from these organizations was positive and supported. Of course, not all of it was, and I believe you'll be hearing from some of those folks in a few minutes. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have about the ordinance or impacts.
Questions?
Two questions. First, a comment. Thank you for a very clear presentation. I figure if I can understand what you're saying, then the average citizen will likely be able to understand it. A second, do we have any hard data on the economic benefit of increasing the owner's compensation deduction? I'm a supporter, along with Commissioner Adams, of bumping it to $125,000. But do we have any existing data that shows what the benefit to the local economy and to the small business community is in raising that that deduction?
Commissioner Fish, hard data, probably not. I think we have an awful lot of anecdotal data and understanding from what that means to businesses when they can keep more of that money in their own pockets to spend either on other services in the city, hire an additional employee, right, things like that. But
we,
no,
not. We do know, however, the profile of the beneficiaries, it's about 9,700 businesses that tend to be smaller, tend to be more locally owned than not,
yes,
tend to provide local services.
Yes.
And my second question is, and this may not, this may be an unfair question, but if we had taken the business license fee and originally indexed it, using some reasonable benchmark, I don't know whether it be inflation or something else, where would it be today?
I haven't updated that calculation. Part of the issue is where do you start that indexing?
Right.
And so it could be anywhere from 98,000 to 150,000, depending upon when you actually started that indexing.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I had one question.
Go ahead.
Going back to the indexing proposal, so the indexing proposal is key to raising the owner's comp, the final amount, to $125,000. Is that correct?
Let me answer that in two parts, Commissioner Saltzman. There is currently a piece in the code that allows the indexing on the owner's compensation. So this year, well, it went to $80,000 last year. It will be indexed again, okay, so up to $83,000. Yeah. So that is continuing, okay. And that has been doing that since 1999. Okay. So that's continuing. If council chooses to make an additional jump, then we will make that jump, and then we still have that index piece in there. So once any jump happens, we will continue to index after that point.
Okay, so there's no jump in January when we adopt the index, or the
so if
the,
we
the
go
fee information that you're looking, okay, for, the employee information,
and that's the
there's
second
no
piece.
There's no link to that with us jumping up to $125,000.
There can be.
There can
and,
be.
And in fact, we would expect, when that came forward, we would expect to propose another jump, okay, in that. That's not just an index, but another jump up until, mm-hmm, and then whatever that is, it would be indexed until council determines how we're going to offset any other jump if that doesn't get us all the way up to 125.
Okay, thanks.
So I just wanted to, you mentioned it in your testimony, I just want to underscore, when we had the discussion with the community starting about 3 years ago, soon after I was took office as city commissioner, the owner's compensation deduction, the fact that it was too low, was first recommended 13 years ago. Raising the exemption, which is especially onerous on newer and small businesses, mm-hmm, was mentioned. We're on track to do the owner's compensation. We've completed the exemption. Then also mentioned was the fact that insurance agents, real estate associate brokers, and we estimate about 1,000 businesses that gross more than $20 million that are currently paying $100 in business, mm-hmm, license fees. Those were identified by the community as points, and then venture capital. Those 6 points were identified as sort of the key points of reform, and we're making our way through those. Can you provide a little bit of historic background, why the real estate agents have been exempt from the city and not the county, and why insurance agents are exempt?
I'll do my best. In the early 1980s, most of the real estate salespeople, I'll call them that, to differentiate a little bit from a principal broker, they were employees of the various real estate firms. In the early 80s, at the state legislative level, that changed to be independent contractors. When that happened, the city of Portland basically said, well, if you're independent contractors, then you fall under our law. You should be paying a business license fee. In approximately 1987, 1988, it went back to the legislature, and there was an addition into the Oregon state statutes that said if a business license tax that was paid in advance for the purpose of doing business was paid, then the real estate agents would be exempt from that. Based on that, it was the city's interpretation that we met that definition. It was never anybody's interpretation that Multnomah County's business income tax, which is truly a tax after the fact, met that definition. So it's that point in time that this disparity between the city and the county's taxing system was created. So that's...
And according to our understanding, that in the early 80s, when the legislature persuaded legislators to classify brokers as contractors, that was at the behest of the real estate industry.
I believe that's true, yes.
And then when we started charging brokers for an annual license fee, the real estate industry went back in 1987, and it was at their lobbying efforts that got them exempt from the city's business license fee.
Yes.
Thanks.
And it's a similar state exemption that eliminates insurance agents.
So talk a little bit about why that was put in place.
The insurance agent exemption that is in state law right now actually affects the city and the county identically. back prior to, and I apologize for not having the exact time, insurance companies were taxed on a gross premiums. So by having a gross premium, you're being taxed before you've taken any deductions to get to a net income. So the payments that you, commissions that you pay to your insurance agents have technically already been taxed. So there is a prohibition at state law because of the way that's taxed to not tax again, because that would, you know, create what was viewed as an unfair situation. Back, and again, I don't remember, it was in the 90s, that taxation scheme changed at the state level and went from a gross premiums tax to a net income tax. That section of the ORS that prohibited local governments from taxing agents, insurance agents and their representatives was not removed. And therefore, that prohibition is still there, yet the underlying reason that it was there in the first place has disappeared.
So part of the, we're in the process right now of making up our legislative agenda, and one of the items to put on the city's legislative agenda for Salem is a removal of this prohibition, just
yes.
like we are seeking to remove the exemption of the real estate agents.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have a invited panel?
Yeah. John Torino from APMBA, Andy Fraser from SBAC, and Bernie Bottomley from Portland Business Alliance.
Welcome. If you just state your name for the record, we'll start with John.
All right. Good morning, Commissioner Adams, Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Fish. My name is John Torino. I'm the Executive Director of the Alliance of Portland Neighborhood Business Associations, and I'm speaking today on their behalf. The APNBA supports the proposed changes in the city's business license fee that would, as explained, administer the fee as a pay-as-you-earn charge rather than the current pay-twice-to-get-started method.
Going to put it like that.
Well, you know, at APNBA, we tend to be a little bit blunt sometimes, but I think that changing this and refunding the previously paid final year taxes over this five-year period is a fair way of giving that money back. We think that this change, by putting the council's words into action, will actually reflect favorably on the city's desire to have its attitude viewed as being much more business-friendly, and that the proposed change also represents a fair and reasonable adjustment to the administration of the business license fee, and that that change will also not only improve the environment for startup and small businesses, but also provide some efficiencies in the city itself. And as you know, the APNBA is already on record as supporting the continued implementation of the city's resolution to increase the owner's compensation deduction to $125,000 in the coming years. And we look forward to working with the city and with Multnomah County to make that happen. This change is essential in order to reduce the cost of starting, maintaining, and growing small and medium-sized businesses on our commercial streets and in our industrial areas, and to foster family wage job growth. We therefore urge your support for these changes, and we thank you for your continued support of the APNBA, the 35-plus business district associations we support, and the tens of thousands of businesses that comprise their membership. Thank you.
Thank you, John, and thanks for you and APNBA's work with us as a partner on this effort.
Good morning. My name is Andy Frazier. I'm with the SBAC and also a small business owner. Thank you for allowing me to speak in favor of this resolution. I support the proposed changes in the city's business license fee that would administer the fee as an after-the-fact charge rather than the current before-the-fact payment. The combined city and county business license fee and business income tax are unique in Oregon cities. This represents a significant challenge for starting and recruiting businesses here in Portland. The current BLF structure requires a new business to pay 2 years of the fee in the first year. I welcome the efforts by the Revenue Bureau and the Council to find ways to decrease the unnecessary and unwelcomed burden of the BLF places on small and startup businesses. This proposed change is fair and reasonable and should benefit both the city and improve the environment for startup and small businesses. I understand the current projections indicate that the city will realize an additional revenue from this change within 5 years, and that revenue will be dedicated to additional reductions to the Oregon's to the owner's compensation deduction, which is also welcome and expected. I believe the BLF reform to be an excellent start, but also believe continued reforms are necessary to promote healthy and stable economic environment in our city. Thank you for all of your hard work with this issue. I urge you to continue working for business growth that is so vitally needed here in Portland.
Thank you, and thanks to the SBAC for your consideration of the issue.
President Saltzman, members of the council, Bernie Bottomley with the Portland Business Alliance. You should have a letter in front of you. I'm just trying to, you know, butter you up.
He's hard enough to deal with.
Yeah, I can. You should have a letter in front of you from the Portland Business Alliance Board of Directors supporting this change. There are a number of reasons that they decided that this was a move that they wanted to support. The biggest issue, of course, is the benefit that it provides to small startup businesses. The double pay mechanism that we currently have is a disincentive to starting up small businesses, and we see it as basically being unfair to those folks that are trying to establish themselves. It also aligns the city BLF with the county BIT, which is a goal that we've had all along as Commissioner Adams has worked with the county to reform both the city and the county BIT-BLF so that it's simpler, it's clearer, and the two mechanisms are aligned. I want to compliment Commissioner Adams and thank him and the council for your work on the broader picture of BLF reform. Moving the owner's compensation to $80,000 has been a big benefit, and we look forward to the conversation about the minimum indexing and how we get to the ultimate goal of $125,000. And also increasing the gross receipts deduction has been a significant benefit. And Commissioner Fish, I know you asked the question about whether there's hard economic data. Like Terry, I don't have that, but I can tell you from our experience that it is a significant benefit in terms of particularly smaller owner-operated businesses inside the city staying here, staying in the core, rather than moving out to areas outside the city. So it's a significant benefit and one that our members have been focused on for quite a long time. So we support this change, recognize and acknowledge that it does have an impact on the realtors, but also believe that on the balance, it's the right thing to do. So thank you.
Thank you all. That's the end of invited testimony.
Okay. Carla, do we have people signed up to testify?
We do. We have four people signed up. First three are Jane Leo, Steve Lucas, and Kylie Ziegler. Come on up. And they'll be followed by Sean Jillians.
Can I trade seats with you and go third?
Oh,
please. You go first.
Okay. Okay. You can go last.
Thank you.
We'll start with Jane. If you could just give us your name for the record, and you have each have 3 minutes.
Council President, I'm Jane Leo, Government Affairs Director for the Portland Metropolitan Association of Realtors, 5331 Southwest McAdam Avenue, Portland. I have with me today Steve Lucas, who is PMAR's 2008 Vice President of Governmental Affairs. He's also the principal broker and owner of Oregon Realty. On behalf of the 7,500 plus members of the association, I delivered to your offices on Friday a letter stating our opposition to the proposal. I'm submitting a copy of that letter today for the record. And in the interest of time and in the fact that you have received that letter, I'm going to summarize our comments. To my points, adoption of the Portland business income tax proposal creates an inequitable system. Individuals who are paid with a W-2, an employee, would not pay the tax, nor do they have it paid for them. But anyone who is compensated with a 1099 would be paying the tax. The city should strive for a system that is equitable and treats everyone equally. It's been said that this proposal will benefit small businesses. Under the proposal, individual realtors would be looked at as a small business, and this tax proposal won't benefit them. I also find the proposal before you to be confusing, if not silent, on when a small business, when a business starts in Portland. We do have situations in which a real estate licensee will do one transaction in the city of Portland. Does that constitute starting a business, therefore the 60-day trigger to file with the Revenue Bureau? A real estate listing in Portland, or for that matter, receiving income from a business physically located in Portland, does not mean the person is using any of Portland's services. It's been said that this would equitably place the financial burden of using services on everyone. However, it is possible to have a real estate listing and never physically enter the city, as some of my members would say, crossing the moat. And finally, I'd like to bring up that of PMAR's membership, 4,201, more than half, do not have offices, do not have what we refer to as sticks and bricks in the city of Portland, yet they are liable for this income tax. So in conclusion, we ask for your no vote on the business income tax proposal, and thank you for consideration of the comments.
May I ask a couple questions? Jane, first of all, thanks to PMAR for supporting the increase in the recording fee in the last legislative session to support affordable housing goals statewide. We appreciate, I can tell you as the housing commissioner, we appreciate your partnership on that.
Thank you.
On the two issues you raised, though, I want to just explore them for a moment with you. And starting first with the inequity argument. Doesn't the fact that the county already imposes this tax and the city doesn't undercut the notion that it's inequitable? In other words, isn't what the city doing just simply, in effect, aligning our tax policies with what the county is doing? I'm not I know you disagree with this, but I'm just maybe it's a rhetorical question. But because the county imposes this tax, and that's the BIT, we have the BLF. I've proposed that if we merge them, we'll just call them the BLT. But in effect, if the county is already imposing this tax, doesn't that sort of undermine a little bit the argument that this is inequitable?
Council President, Commissioner Fish, I feel like what you're asking me is, do we support what Multnomah County does as far as their tax system? And no, we don't. Okay. It's just that the Portland issue is the current one before us. It doesn't mean efforts won't continue to change the way in which Multnomah County taxes businesses.
Fair enough, and I know why you get the big bucks. So you're good at your job. And the second point I want to raise is, you talked about people that don't have sticks and bricks in Portland who would be subject to the tax. And my understanding is there is an exemption, Commissioner Adams, that would apply if there was a certain amount of de minimis activity in Portland. Is that correct?
Yeah, we'll bring up Sue and Terry to talk about that.
So, I mean, I want to address that point on the record later because I think it's a reasonable point, but I think the exemption that is built into this would carve out most of the people who did a single transaction in Portland. But I want to put that on the record.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Sir? Commissioner Saltzman, commissioners. My name is Steve Lucas. I am the VP of Governmental Affairs for PMAR. Another issue that came up in consultation with a CPA that specializes in business income taxes and doing the taxes for those business is that currently under Multnomah County and the tax that they have set up is that if you have a business license fee, you get to subtract that as a cost of business to arrive at your taxable income. If you change that to a business tax, then whatever that tax is, you have to add back on top of your taxable net to do your calculation for the Multnomah County tax, which in essence is a tax on a tax. So if Portland mirrors the Multnomah County tax, then we'd be in that same situation. And you would be increasing the tax actually for the current businesses, and those businesses that file Multnomah County taxes. And I'd like to point out that, you know, as we're talking about small businesses and investment, that those monies could be spent by those small businesses for growth and other job creation. So that's another concern that we have and would ask your no vote on this. Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Kyle Ziegler. I'm with Castlegate Realty. I've been in real estate for 14 years. I contend to be the smallest real estate company in the city of Portland. And I'm glad I got to speak last because I've been learning a lot this morning. I think you've done a great job organizing, researching, and even outreaching. I feel very badly that I am at the tail end of this effort. But I did want to come down here at PMAR's request and represent myself strictly and my opinions and views. I believe both Steve and Jane have documented some very good reasons for the exclusion not to include, or the exclusion to not be applied to real estate agents. But I just wanted to say this morning that we, as an entity in real estate, have very unique setups within our offices, within our structures of city, county, state, and federal rules. And I can only speak for myself, but frankly, I've never heard of a tax that simplifies anything, ever. So that's my opinion, and I stand with Jane and Steve. And, you know, it just gets more complicated to be in business. And I'll say that for the record, and you know that to be true. Not to mention our industry has taken a really big hit the last 2 years, and it's hard. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's hard, and it's harder for the little guy. And I'm the little guy. So I'm speaking today to ask you to oppose, join with them, and to oppose this tax. Isn't there enough tax yet? But thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, our next.
The last person who signed up is Sean Jillians.
Is there anybody else in the audience that wished to testify on this matter? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. President, and members of the council. For the record, Sean Jillians, Legislative Policy Director for the Oregon Association of Realtors. At the outset, I'd like to thank Commissioner Adams and city staff for all the outreach that they've done with our local association here to try and work on a compromise and work through some of the issues that are associated with this ordinance. With the discussion of the legislative history and the intent of the legislature and what might occur in Salem, I thought it was important that the Oregon Association of Realtors weigh in a little bit on this issue. As you all know, the city of Portland certainly is a leader throughout the nation and definitely within the state of Oregon, as goes Portland, a lot of the other cities in the state go. So we're concerned with particularly the definition of employee that's in this new ordinance. When in 1987, I think Terry Williams gave an excellent recap of the legislative history, but in 1987, when that preemption was put in place, the argument was that our independent contractors are more akin to employers. And so that was the reason they were exempted from the business license tax. At that point in time, the legislature also has subsequently defined what an independent contractor is. It talks about means of control and direction over individuals. And to be perfectly honest with you, we think this new definition tends to not take that into account, merely discussing W-2s or whether or not they're paid with 1099s. Your previous definition of employee actually mirrored the state statute to a great degree, and we found that to be a lot more acceptable to us in that regard. So I would just reiterate what our local association has already said, that we are in opposition to this proposed ordinance. From the state perspective, our biggest concern is this new definition of employee, though, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Hey, maybe you can want to give you a chance to respond if your understanding of history is any different than what's been provided to me. What's been provided to me is that the industry itself in the early 80s sought and lobbied the state legislature and were successful in getting this classification of associate brokers as independent contractors, and it's reported that it was to get out from the burden of paying, you know, the employee-related taxes and benefits. Do you have a different understanding of the reason that your industry sought those changes in state law?
To be honest with you, Mr. President, Commissioner Adams, to be honest with you, despite the fact that I'm aging by the minute, I was not around in the early 80s. All I can do is look at the legislative history as well. It was some time ago. From what I have gathered, there were certainly some issues with becoming independent contractors. However, if you look at the state definition of independent contractor, there's a weighing and balancing of the various factors, whether or not they're treated as independent contractors under employment law in the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. President, if Terry and Sue, Terry, if you could come back up. I saw maybe run through 6 points very quickly. One of the issues raised, I think Jane raised it, was the sticks and bricks issue. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to make sure that, I mean, the sticks and bricks issue exists for a variety of, and this is Shane Abma, the sticks and bricks issue exists for all kinds of industries. And do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. For businesses doing business in Portland, one of the first evidences of that business is, of course, the sticks and bricks, having a business operation here. Another measure is doing providing services here. So many, many people provide services here, consulting services, legal services, accounting services inside the city of Portland that don't actually have a building or an office in Portland.
And who employees might never actually set foot.
Well, if employees never set foot in the city and there is no physical presence, either by the employees or buildings, then we don't have an incidence to tax. There has to be some reasonable touching of that activity to the city in order for us to have a jurisdiction to tax. That's called nexus. So you either get that with the sticks and bricks, the buildings, or with your people, or with your property that's coming in. Leased property is a physical presence in Portland, and that can be subject. So that happens across every type of business, professional services, retail. They all have aspects of that. So it's just not limited to.
But talk about the one-off transaction during the course of the year.
Okay. There's, Commissioner Fish, I believe you mentioned the exemption. First of all, anybody who's gross receipts from all their business activity that's less than $50,000 doesn't pay a minimum. If we believe they've got enough activity here that it looks like they're doing business, we might require a filing so that they can prove that to us, but there is no payment that comes with that. So that's the first piece. The second piece is we additionally have two different administrative rules on the book that deal with de minimis levels of activity. One is specifically for tangible personal property, things you can touch, and the other one is for services. Currently, the services one was written approximately 6 years ago, 6-7 years ago, and it hasn't been adjusted for inflation or anything like that. So certainly if this is a concern and we want to look at that de minimis level of activity, we can examine that and maybe change that administrative rule.
Is that the 2,500?
That's the 10 visits and less than 2,500, yes. So it's we could easily go back and perhaps at this point in time that should be 10,000 or whatever. So that can be adjusted. So those are the two measures that you initially have. Additionally, with a service, you look at the amount of the income-producing activity that takes place in Portland versus everywhere else. And I know when doing a lot of discussions, we get very simplistic in explaining that, but it actually can be very complicated. So in the case of a real estate agent or any other consultant or professional, if they're coming in and they do 5 hours, let's do 50 hours of work here versus 1,000 hours of work out, that's like 5%. And so that makes that amount very small. So if you were looking at that de minimis level and you'd say that two visits were, that percentage makes that to be $2,000 when you get it down, then that might still hit that de minimis level. So we haven't gone into very, very complicated scenarios, but we certainly can, and we want to educate and help. We don't want to tax more than what we're entitled to tax, but we do want to tax what we are entitled to tax.
I just wanted to make sure that the real estate industry is coming off of probably five of the most successful years in the recent memory of the industry, but it's currently in the doldrums right now. There's no question about it. So they haven't been taxed during the good years. We are looking at this applying now in the bad years, and I just wanted to be clear that in terms of your comment of not helping small business, we raised the exemption from $25,000 to $50,000. So if you're a very small realtor or associate broker with transactions less than $50,000, you're exempt.
And again, it's not the gross transactions, the sale, it's the commission would be coming through. So it's not grossed up.
And if you're an independent contractor as an associate broker, you also, true or false, benefit from the raising of the owner's compensation deduction.
Yes.
So those are two benefits that this overall reform do provide in terms to your good question, I understand your question, this is complicated, do provide the real estate industry as it does all small businesses.
Yes.
Okay. The issue of the subtracting the business license fee raised by Steve.
That is something that we can look into. There is a small piece in the law that talks about not allowing certain tax deduction at the same level. That's easy to change if council decides that that's what we need to do. So that would impact everybody, not just a particular industry. But that is absolutely something that that we could do and bring back.
So it looks like there might be two follow-ups as we continue our efforts to ever perfect this system. One is the
de minimis rule.
Thank you. And then the other is the subtraction issue vis-a-vis the county.
Yes.
Okay. We'll keep working on those.
Okay. Any other
Shane,
questions?
Anything you wanted to add?
The only thing that I would add would be a follow-up to what Commissioner Fish said earlier. When we hear that, oh, this is going to be complicated, I can't figure out when it's going to apply to me or not, as you pointed out, they already do the county tax, which is the same as ours, with the only exception of we have a first-year double-up and they don't pay their final year. But any rule you're looking at, I've come into the county and do I qualify? Do I need to be filing this return? It's the same. It's the same analysis with the city and the county, as you mentioned earlier, for fairness reasons and for calculations. They're identical.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, this item moves to second reading. I assume that'll be next week. If you could read the next time certain.